Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America Prospect Podcast. I'm Kyle Glitzer alongside Josh Norris, coming to you from the Swan Resort Disney World in Lake Buena Vista, Florida, here at the winter meetings at
12:56 in the morning.
Taking you through Brewers prospects. Hey, prospect season never sleeps. Josh, we saw a lot of these guys come through Carolina this year. A couple more were in the Arizona Fall League.
Some of them are the same ones who were in Carolina, but yeah.
You know, when I look through this Brewers, list as it's come out, Tom Hodricourt, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel put it together for us. Lewis Brinson at 1, Brandon Woodruff at 2, Corbin Burns at 3, Keston Hiura at 4, Monty Harrison at 5. For me, I see 5 guys that are firmly top 100 guys who should have an impact at the major league level.
I just look at this list and I think I give this system an incomplete for this year. Quite frankly, Brinson was hurt. I think Woodruff was hurt part of the year.
He got called up to make his major league debut, and injury struck before he actually made the start.
Hiura was hurt. Harrison was not hurt for the first time in a while. Eysan Diaz was hurt. Corey Ray, I'm going to give a pass on this year. Just he did not have a great year, but he was a little young for the level, if I remember correctly. Even though I think he repeated it. There's got to be a little more there than what we saw. So there, I would just give this system a little bit of a pass for this year.
You know, it's interesting because I see what you're saying. A lot of guys had injuries. A lot of guys had down years. But I still think
we saw... And a lot of guys were young for high A, that big cluster.
But we saw Corbin Burns shoot up, demonstrate, hey, he is a real dude. Lewis Brinson made his extended major league debut. Woodruff got there. Maybe it's because I'm a Southern California guy. To me, there's zero doubt Keston Hiura will be an impact bat moving forward. And Monty Harrison, I mean, for me, we talk about the top. You know, the top of a system is what matters most. Monty Harrison showed when he's healthy this year. You talk about a game-changing talent, offensively at least.
Defensively.
There were times he looked great, and there were other times in the fall league where he got really bad reads.
Oh,
and
I've jumps. Heard of nothing but excellent.
There was a few random ones, but I think they were out of character, because you're right. There are times you saw him in center field, you saw him in right field, a guy that can be a true impact player. And for me, when you have a top five in your system of 2 guys in the majors, starter moving quickly, 2 real true impact bats, to me, that's as well-rounded of a top five as most other systems.
And again, on Hiura, I do think he's going to be something, but I would like to see a premium college bat out of, UC Irvine tested at somewhere other than the AZL and a little bit of the Midwest League. I want to see him against his own caliber of competition.
And a lot of that was because he was down. Right. He was down there getting his elbow rehab. So, but no, and that's fair. As much as that top five, to me, that is a separate tier, you kind of hit on it a little bit. The next was a group of guys. Luis Ortiz did not have a great year. Brett Phillips had a very good year. And Brett Phillips is a guy that, we've had some discussions about him. I saw him a lot in Lancaster. He had a rough year at AA. But he actually, has done pretty well. His major league stint last year was really solid. I had one scouting director tell me he thought that Brett Phillips was a top 100 caliber prospect at midseason.
He's got an elite level arm. He's got an elite level laugh. He's a possum catcher. I will take him.
I mean, he's a guy that I think when you look at number 7 prospects in a lot of systems, this is a guy. I don't know how many other number 7 prospects I could say, hey, this is a real dude who has a real chance to be a solid average everyday big leaguer. And oh, by the way, is there. You don't have to project a whole lot.
Well, I didn't think you can find that in some systems. There are some pretty elite systems out there with number 7 that are 50 mediums here. He's going to be a good player. You've got Brinson, who's a little ahead of him, obviously. You've got Braun. There's
Domingo Santana.
Santana, he's on the block. I don't know where exactly he's going to, where Phillips is going to play in the immediate future, but he'll go to Colorado Springs and keep on mashing because that's what happens.
It'll be interesting to me to just see what his role is moving forward because, again, if he hits like he did last year, that's starter-level production, what he did in the major leagues. And I do believe that there's a guy in there who can be an everyday-level major leaguer, what he can do for you offensive, defensively. But you're right. The Brewers do have a wealth of riches in the outfield a little bit. And the fact that they're contending, it's not like Ryan Braun's on the trade block. In past years, it's been discussed, should we move him to the Dodgers, clear the salary?
But Domingo Santana is.
Right. And that's where it's going to be interesting to see, what you get back. And by the way, I think Domingo Santana, also former Astros prospect along with Phillies.
Yes.
excellent player in his own right. He, you know, defensively wasn't great, but offensively, he's a very talented player.
And we forget, I mean, he's pretty young.
Yeah, not a seasoned vet by any means. I think the Brewers are in a really good shape with their outfield. All these guys we've talked about are there.
I mean, I like some guys down further on this list.
So the next tier is interesting to me. You've got Lucas Ursa, you've got Ison Diaz, you've got Corey Ray. Three guys who drew very mixed reviews for their performance this year at high. And, you know, Ursa was not actually below league average. He was right about league average. Corey Ray was 0.4 years below, 0.6 years below league average. He was essentially league average. Ison Diaz was younger. Just what was your read on this group of the Ursig, Diaz, Ray group?
I mean, Ray could not have performed much worse. I wanted
it could have been Javier Guerra, but yeah, in Lahaya. But yes, I guess what you're saying. I'm on board.
Yes, he was underwhelming in just about every facet, but except maybe sometimes on defense. But he also is, you know, you've got a system with Brinson. And you've got a system with Trent Grisham now, and you've got a system with Monte Harrison.
There's a system with Brett Phillips is a better player than Corey Ray.
Right. I'm going in even further down the depth chart there. There are other outfielders for center field, and there were better outfielders on his team for center field. Monte Harrison was probably the best center fielder on that team. Trent Grisham, formerly Trent Clark, his year was interesting. I'm not giving up on him because of power potential that I saw. And, you know, I pointed out to me that he drew 100 walks this year. That's nothing to sneeze at. If you've got strike zone discipline and power potential, those things tend to come together at the upper levels when umpires get a little better.
And steals bases efficiently. You know, it's interesting for me. Of all these guys, the guy I came out feeling best about is probably Ursig. Because for me, he was a guy that showed you massive power. Showed you a heck of an ability to play third base. Mm-hmm. And for me, watching him, it was an approach issue. He was overly aggressive, just would take this ginormous hack at the first pitch, even if it wasn't the pitch for him to hit. And that, to me, is something you can teach and refine a little bit. You know, Ison Diaz, it's tough because he was hurt. Corey Ray, for me, was a guy that...
Ursa got a mitigating factor, too. He was, for whatever reason, the Carolina League is... Not for whatever reason, but the Carolina League is 10 teams. And you tend to get the same group of teams... early, and those particular teams were lefty heavy, so he was facing way more lefties than you get normally. So those numbers early on were skewed a little bit because he was facing so many lefties.
At the same time, though, that's part of player development.
Well, right, but you get the adjustment. Sure, that's a little bit of a blessing in disguise that you get all that, but it's not something you normally see on a regular basis. Is a 50-60% lefty.
Was the joke they were calling it the Kara Lefty League?
Yes, that's the joke. That I want to say Tom Flanagan came up with, or Lucas, I'm not sure which, but you know, he was out in the fall league working on a little bit defensively and offensively approach wise. He was a very interesting and I thought impressive prospect down the stretch.
You know, he's the guy that of that group does rank highest on the prospect list, and truthfully, he's the guy that I think, just sensing both in our looks and talking to scouts, the guy that you have kind of the most general faith in. You know, Corey Ray, I mean, look, you and I saw it. Every scout, every player did not make a single adjustment. You know, it's one thing, guy looks a certain way in April. Okay, go back in June, nothing changes. Go back in August, nothing changed. Go back in the fall league, nothing changed. And it was just, I think, a very concerning factor. You have a guy whose swing path, we saw it, anything on the outer half of the plate, couldn't do anything with, just kind of flipped the bat head, never looked comfortable in the box. The one thing he hit, and I saw him hit this exact same pitch over and over again, and it was kind of funny to see a left-handed hitter do this. A breaking ball from a lefty, for whatever reason, he tracked it well, got the bat to the ball, especially if it was on the inner half. He'd drive that pitch again and again and again. But if you're a left-handed hitter and you can't, I mean, all you can do is at best foul off 92-mile-an-hour fastballs on the outer half of the plate, not even on the corner, just, you know, over the plate, but on the outer half. A right-handed pitcher, there's not a whole lot there. A lot of strikeouts, a lot of three-pitch at-bats, a lot of weak contacts. He's a good athlete. You see some strength. You see some size.
You see a lot of strength.
You know, you see speed. For a guy his size, he's pretty well put together. I mean, it's interesting. There's not a lot of scouts left. After 1 year, I was amazed how many are jumping ship, but he has a pedigree. He's a fifth overall pick. I mean, where are you on the Corey Ray just train in general?
I don't know what you do with him this year. I just don't know what you do with him. if you send him back to high class A, you risk wrecking his confidence because he has spent all but like six games of his career at high A. At the same time, his performance does not dictate a move to double A. But you probably have someone coming behind him in Wisconsin who could probably take that spot. But you know, Corey Ray is one thing, but you just highlighted the guy that nobody can see. This is the radio. Freddie Peralta.
We can't tell you where he's in the top 10. If you were asking me, who do I have more confidence in reaching the major leagues and having a career in the major leagues, my answer would be Freddie Peralta, not only over Corey Ray, but possibly Ison Diaz as well.
Well, it's apples and oranges. They're both fruit, but it's a different thing.
Different, but again, we go back to, you know, I feel like Ray is almost the opposite of Ray. Peralta's the opposite, because Ray looks the part, physical. Peralta doesn't look the part, but he's always been successful in pro ball.
Well, the one I kept getting was, okay, so they do a tandem start system. And he was always tandem with Marcus Duplan, who has better stuff, period. But he doesn't know what to do with it.
He's a worse pitcher. Better stuff, worse pitcher.
Freddie Peralta is the epitome of movement over stuff. He's got deception, he's got late life, he knows how to pitch, and he just gets out. And at some point, that matters. And he tore it up in high A, he tore it up in double A.
As a 20-year-old, by the way.
Right. And he was part of the Adam Lind trade with Daniel Misaki. And I want to say there's one more piece.
One of the Mariners guys. The thing that I saw with Freddie Peralta that I liked as well, some guys, especially at the lower minors, come out and just try and blow it out their first inning, and by their third or fourth inning, they're down. When I saw him make his appearances, I saw a guy who was first inning, come out 89 to 91, but he's moving it around, he was working quickly, getting at-bats, and then the second time through the order, when you know guys are going to have a more comfortable look against you, he'd ramp it up and you'd see the threes and the fours, occasionally a five. And so to me, it was a very mature pitcher who had the ability to dial up and down, but wasn't just dialing up and down in the sense of one at bat, you know, oh, I'm going to shoot 91, then come back 95. He was smart about deploying it over the second at bat, almost so that the guy who he was seeing him a second time was almost seeing a completely different pitcher and couldn't take what he learned that first at bat into his second.
I'd be interested to see like just how many times you saw him where he was a true starter and where he was
both times I saw him, he was the starter. He was the guy pitching the first inning, and Duplan came in the fifth or the sixth, depending on the game.
See, I would be interested to see how that velocity, that the way he held it and then deployed it later, happened when he came in like the fifth or whatever.
Right, and that's, I think overall, I mean, this is a kid that I like him. I mean, we can break down, all things he does well. You mention it. We talked a little about it. It's a package that works. It's a profile that, physically might not excite a lot of people, but gets the job
outs
done.
Outs excite people.
Outs, age. Again, if he was 25 doing this, different story, but he's 20, he's young. But the arm works. There's deception, but some guys, it's deception and it looks like it's a little strain. It's a clean arm action. It's some built to last.
Some other guys I like on this list, and I don't think there's a lot of people who like this guy at 21, Cody Medeiros. I've seen him horrible. I've seen him terrible, but every so often he shows you the kind of stuff that makes you remember why he had cards at Jupiter in 2013, like eight deep. And I've seen him, up to 97 from the left side with an absolute double plus slider. Some of the pitches, if you don't know who's on the mound, it looks like Andrew Miller. But so fleeting.
And that's, for me, there's no question if this guy has a role. It's as a reliever. He was a tandem starter. I didn't find a single scout who thought he's a starter down the road. I mean, it's a pure reliever. But, hey, situational lefty, and if he can start getting to that role. And
lefties who could throw 97 are valuable.
To say the least. Yeah. For him, I'm just going to be, look, we've established he will not throw enough strikes over three innings, four innings, Lord knows five innings. Can he do it over one inning? You think so, but we need to see it. And that's where I remember talking to a scout who said, you know he's going to be a reliever. I would like to see the Brewers just do it now, because at a certain point, he needs to learn how to, pitch back-to-back days, get up at a moment's notice, all the little things that go into being a reliever. I think it'll be interesting to see how quickly the Brewers pull the trigger. A lot of times you will see that change made high to double A, especially double A to triple A. But you're right, that the stuff is there.
Some other guys on this list who are...
I actually like the depth of this. I mean, talk about KJ Harrison. Dude can hit. Whether he can catch, we'll find out. Dude can really hit. Jacob Gatewood, got contacts. Oh, by the way, he's back. He can hit. He's seeing the ball better. The double-A numbers were down a little bit, but again, as a corner bench bat, absolutely.
You haven't hit my guy yet. Number way down the list, Antonio Pinheiro. That guy is a sorcerer. That guy is a double plus glove. Easy, 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 easy. He makes plays that defy physics and vision and logic. I love him. I don't know what he's going to do with the bat, but he can definitely play Major League shortstop.
You know, one guy that I found interesting, the guy who puts up the numbers but scouts were still lukewarm on, was Cody Ponce. I remember Cody Ponce, I'm sorry. You're going to laugh. There was at my old job, there was a pitcher who had the same last name spelling Ponce, but yes, he's Cody Ponce. It's interesting. I remember talking to a scout and I said, you know, hey, what do you think? I said, I like him, but what is he? In terms of what the stuff is, it doesn't match up with, you know, we talk about people maybe not loving Peralta, you know, his size, his profile, stuff-wise. They still see a little more than they see with Ponce. Again, I'm inclined to give the dude the benefit of the doubt because he was successful at Cal Poly Pomona. He's been successful, you know, when he's had to go up and face, you know, the guys in pro ball. But I still sensed a lot of lukewarm, you know, scouts seeing him as an organizational guy just because they didn't see the stuff that you see major league right-handers have.
Yeah, I mean, it was never overpowering. And the stuff doesn't match up with the body.
Did you ever see him top 93? I had him 93.
I only saw him like the once. Okay. I think. Just because
It's like, you know, talk about a guy, a Peralta, who there's times he's 89, but you saw him touch a 5. He could get there and move it around. With Ponce, it was pretty consistent, a 90 to a 3. I know I didn't see more than a 3, and I don't think he got a report at ever more than a 3. You know, it's interesting. He's on a list of a very good team, but to me, he's kind of that guy that I'm going to be most interested to see what he does next year. Because if he jumps to Double A and shows, hey, I can mix and match enough, a secondary pitch takes a step forward, you know, something, just something that maybe grows a little bit. You know, I'm going to keep an eye on him as close as, you know, some of these big names. Okay, how's Corey Ray going to bounce back? How's Ison Diaz going to bounce back? Guys like that. Just personally, Ponce interests me. Maybe it's a little bit because he's a SoCal guy. I admit that, but just kind of that, you know, got to keep an eye on.
There's another guy on this list that we glossed over up toward the top, Luis Ortiz. There's a guy who we saw what Josh Hader was capable of coming in and doing this year. Luis Ortiz could do the same thing. He's got the dynamic fastball slider combination. If he clicks, he can be one of those guys who comes up in the second half of the season and dominates.
You know, he's a guy that I saw him when he was in the Rangers system at High Desert, and no one pitches well at High Desert, and he pitched well at High Desert. It's just, you know, he's a bigger guy. Fitness is always going to be a concern with him. I think for me, anytime I see a guy with the stuff he has, but the strikeout rate just isn't there, I wonder, okay, is it something that you put him in relief and he plays up, or is it a bigger problem where he's just over the plate too much? You know,
I think it's something else where it's you're trying to get a guy to develop a changeup, and right, he might not be able to get to use that slider, that nasty slider, right, in the strikeout counts, and you're trying to get him also to not necessarily go for the strikeout every time. You're trying to get him to induce early contact, to be a little more pitch efficient, to keep him, you know, from blowing out. You're teaching him how to be a complete pitcher rather than the two-pitch guy.
Right, which is what you want. You know, he's 21 in Double-A. This was a young guy. I don't think, you know, we still ranked him number 6 ahead of some very good prospects. He's going to be interesting to watch. You know, as we move back to the top, I do want to talk about Corbin Burnes, 4th-round pick out of St. Mary's. Not a nobody. Like, people knew him. He was on the Brewers top 30 entering the year. I believe he was...
He's the minor league ERA leader, I think.
Totally, you know, exceeded all expectations, made himself into a top 100 prospect. I think what I found interesting when I saw him was this was not a guy, when I was out there, as much as his ERA was low and everything, he wasn't dominating. What he was doing was making every pitch he had to. There were times where the fastball would rise out on him, and he'd elevate, and he'd walk two guys. But when he had to get the ground ball to escape with the double play unscathed, he got the ground ball double play. When he had to locate, even if he threw three curveballs that missed their spot, put himself, got behind the hitter, when he had to get the one in there for strike three, he got it. And that, to me, was just interesting watching a guy who wasn't as dominant as his numbers might indicate, but it was more reflection of when he had to make a pitch, he made it every time.
And with him, nothing straight. Just like Peralta, nothing straight. You can rack up a 1.9 or whatever it was ERA by striking out the world, or you can get ground balls and fly balls. You get to hit them where they ain't.
And he got plenty of strikeouts. I mean, that's for me is a guy where, okay, talk about a guy who, even if you pick the ball up out of his hand, it's not going to end up where you want it to be. And he has the combination of, you know, command, moxie, poise to make the pitches he needs. I'll take that every single day. And oh, by the way, the stuff, it's not, you know, fringy stuff either. He was up to sit 96, would sit more threes and fours, which, you know, take above average fastball. There's stuff, there's poise, there's some life.
We miss Mauricio Dubon here, who's going to be a little interesting little piece as an infielder, and I will think it will always be helpful that he's bilingual. That's never a problem these days, and he's a high-character individual.
You know, I think overall when I look at this Brewers list, and we talk about a team that was in playoff contention at probably a year before a lot of people predicted, sometimes you see these top 10 lists, you say, okay, I see five guys who probably are really, truly, you know, decent shot major leaguers, four or five others who are kind of a wild card type, and, you know, maybe a couple other guys who are sleepers. The Brewers, you go down 12, 13, 14, you see reasonable paths to the big leagues for a lot of these guys without having to, you know, go over the top crazy projection. Now, I'm not saying that all 14, 15 of their top guys are going to end up in the big leagues at some point. But you mentioned a guy like a Dubon. You know, Trent Grisham is
funky
and awkward in a lot of ways, but left-handed bat, gets on base a ton, dunk for the level,
tools,
power, steals bases efficiently. Like, there's a path there. There's a roll path there.
And there's still superstar potential there. I mean, there's...
That's beyond where I'm willing to go, but I will say that there's a... Overall, I think we can agree that this Brewers system both has that high, you know, IC5 top 100 guys plus a depth group that, you know, for me has the Brewers... Look, it's always going to be tough competing against the Cubs, competing against the Cardinals. We know the Reds have started to draft some interesting guys. You know, the Pirates, for whatever struggles they've had, they've still got a group of guys who are pretty talented with some nice pitchers on the way. But the Brewers are in good shape. I don't look at the Brewers and say, this was, you know, the year where it was either this year or bust. I do feel like they're in position to contend for quite a while with the group they've got in the system and in the majors.
We're forgetting what else you can use this system for.
You can go get some stuff. And that's been the biggest thing. Pitching side, Jimmy Nelson, you know, out for the year after his injury. We saw Chase Anderson take steps forward. There's no question, though, that the Brewers probably do need the pitching help. And last year at the deadline, we saw them tied to Sonny Gray. Obviously, that didn't happen. The offseason's still young. A lot of moves are being made. Names and rumors have been thrown out.
I'm sure there's going to be one completed by the time we get done with this.
Yeah, it seems like it. I mean, overall, I do have to say, though, when I look at systems, and even though a lot of the guys at Carolina did not perform to the level we probably expected them to, you still saw the talent. And for me, I think when I think about all the guys I saw this year at Carolina and in the Arizona Fall League, you know, gosh, if Monty Harrison can stay healthy, it would not shock me if, when all said and done, he's the guy who has the most major league impact on this list.
Oh, on the Brewers? I thought they were going to say of all the guys you saw this year.
No. Among all the Brewers guys. It would not shock me in the least.
No, that could be a slam dunk center fielder type with, you know, offensive impact.
I keep seeing Mike Cameron. Every time, just the way he runs, the way he moves, his swing, his swag, I just keep seeing Mike Cameron.
Did Mike Cameron ever take off his shirt in the middle of a Midwest League All-Star game?
I don't know. But one thing Monty Harrison, look, Mike Cameron was known for high strikeouts, especially early in his career. That is one thing with Monty Harrison, 30% K rate, 5 or 6% walk rate. It wasn't great, so that is something to watch moving forward. but you saw the skills, you saw the tools, you saw it all. And then I know you thought very highly of him. I thought very highly of him. And I mean, you did the Carolina League top 20 prospects list. There were people who liked him more than guys who have been top 50 prospects for us.
I think he ranked the highest of the whole Brewers group in the Carolina League. Yeah, they was behind some guys like your Eloys, your Victor Robleses.
Your Tristan McKenzie's. I remember at one point, the feedback you were getting was he could even potentially go above McKenzie. And McKenzie's, I don't know, one of the top 7 or 8 pitching prospects in baseball.
Yeah, McKenzie got some interesting reviews, but that's another podcast.
That's another podcast. That's the Teddy Cahill podcast.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, I think that'll about do it. It's 1:22 in the morning. We've got the Rule 5 draft tomorrow.
In 7 hours and 38 minutes.
It's a labor of love, isn't it?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you again. Feel free to keep downloading these podcasts and check out baseballamerica.com where you can subscribe. We got all our top 10s. We have Prospect Handbook coming out. Feel free to go ahead and get your pre-orders in. Almanac is on its way to doorstep soon as well, so make sure and check it all out. For Josh Norris, I'm Kyle Glazer. Have a good night, everybody.